Cruz, Sandy, and Scott.
Plays balls out every time.
Oh, my God.
Cruz, Sandy, and Scott.
Wait a minute. Don't run this jive by us.
Cruz, Sandy, and Scott.
It was like I was a genius.
This is Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
So you, my friend, are on crack.
So, yeah, it's probably, I don't know if it's a cliche, maybe you could say it's a bad excuse. I agree.
Here's Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Friday edition of Drew, Sandy, and Scott. Drew Goodman, Sandy Clough, Scott Hastings. Scott, he's making his way back from the Broadmoor today where they shot their altitude golf show. Sandy's in our Greenwood Village studios, and I'm in lovely San Francisco where it's absolutely gorgeous today. Rockies open up a three-game set against the Giants and on to Los Angeles. Plenty to do on this Friday. How about those San Antonio Spurs last night? Another blowout in Miami, no less, in this series that everybody projected, Sandy, to go seven games. Doesn't look like it's going anywhere near seven.
It does not look that way. And you came the closest, I believe, among the three of us yesterday to not necessarily forecasting that easy a Spur win, but certainly suggesting that maybe some things were exposed on the part of the Spurs in imposing their will on the Heat in Game 3 and more than carrying that over with, in many ways, I know the scoring margin, the differential at the end was about the same, but I thought last night's game was, if anything, much more emphatic than Game 3 in the sense that you could say, hey, that was a once-in-a-lifetime shooting night for the Spurs, Game 3, and they won't shoot 76% again in the first half. They won't set the kinds of records for efficiency that they set in Game 3. Well, I thought they were even more impressive last night. And, you know, it's sad in sports sometimes when you see people age, but sometimes the process is gradual, even imperceptible. We saw, Drew, last night, a great player, a surefire Hall of Famer in Dwayne Wade, I think, roll before our eyes last night.
Yeah, it's
just
interesting.
Just looked old.
Yes.
And they prepared all year for him to be at peak efficiency come playoff time, particularly when they got to the finals. He sat out a third of the games during the season, and last night, appeared healthy enough to play, but no longer healthy enough to be good, the kind of good he was for so many years.
I'll give you a contrast, Sandy. It's something I mentioned the other day that I thought would be potentially very important going to Game 4, and that is the fact that San Antonio won by such a decisive margin, and the game never was really in doubt, that their three players that have some age on it, Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker, have some age on them, they were able to play them really limited minutes, 28 to 30 minutes. And I thought that that would help them. Popovich has been, controversial yet brilliant, I guess, in guarding their minutes during the regular season. I say controversial because at times, as they went to Miami the first time, a lot of people who may have bought tickets anticipating that game don't get to see any of them. And I believe he ultimately got fined at one point. But anyhow, the point being is they didn't have to play large minutes. I looked at what happened with Dwayne Wade, and if you look at the playoffs, and I'd have to look at each game, but just in my mind, he would play one very successful type game, a Dwayne Wade type game, and the next game, his numbers were not nearly as good as the previous game. I think the wear and tear of playing in that league and playing at such a high level and having to carry.
All right, we have apparently lost Drew, but yes, I think the point he's making there is absolutely on the mark. And there is a cumulative effect in all this, but I think the transformation that we saw in the last couple of games, games 3 and 4, what we saw that distinguished those two games from games 1 and 2 was that Kawhi Leonard emerged for San Antonio in a positive light as maybe the game's next superstar. And when Greg Popovich, who doesn't reveal all that much about the Spurs operation, about future intentions, says that's the future, when a lot of us, including Popovich himself, may be long gone, Leonard will be the key player, the face of the franchise, as it were. And we saw that come true over the last couple of games. Again, the big scoring game in Game 3, and last night, as good an all-around game as you'll see anybody play, to the point where now, if you were to nominate an MVP for the finals, would probably be Kawhi Leonard. And on the other hand, we see Wade, amid other aspects of disintegration on the part of the Heat, just kind of grinding to a halt last night, drew 10 points, 3 for 13 shooting. And it just my thought, I'm watching the game and I say, since when did the Heat-Spurs series, or exactly when did the Heat-Spurs series begin to replicate the NHL finals, which through two games we thought would be a wonderful series and kind of petered out with the Ranger effort in Game 3, even though the Rangers came back and win Game 4. Now, this series is exactly the same. San Antonio up 3-1 going back home. Kings up 3-1 going back home. But the interesting thing here, of course, is that if and when the Spurs close out this series, all the conversation will begin anew about what's going to happen with the Heat, particularly what's going to happen with LeBron James. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But, you know, it does look like the Heat at their best is something we talk about now in the past tense, doesn't it?
Well, it was really they were the big three, but it was really the fact that LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, two guys that on any given night could take over. And I know Chris Bosh is capable of doing some special things, but he doesn't have the dynamic game that the other two have. And he started out, Dwayne Wade did 1 for 10. LeBron had a nice night. It wasn't a superior night. It wasn't, boy, he's the best player on the planet and he just scored 45 and added 14 rebounds and handed out 7 assists. It was nothing like that. He had a good, solid game. But the way San Antonio moves the ball, and to me, the way they're playing, you have to keep in mind that they're doing it against a defense that I have unbelievable respect for. They're tremendous defensively, Miami, and they're getting any shot they want. And, Sandy, to the point you made a little while ago, as emphatic a victory as Game 3 was, leading by 25 at one point, shooting
right,
76%
right,
basically in the first half,
yep,
last night the final numbers were even better.
Yes, especially on defense for the Spurs. And, again, we're back to this idea. I think J.A. Donde did the math on ESPN.com in his piece today. 86 playoff games in the past 4 years. A physical toll is taken on the Heat, but I think it's as much psychological. The mental stamina to challenge the Spurs just isn't there on the part of the Heat. If they can't summon up an effort that keeps them within 18 points on their home floor in either Game 3 or Game 4, boy, it's hard to believe that they'll have much left, even with the extra day, with a travel day and the extra day before Game 5 on Sunday night. Hard to imagine that they could
great
summon up.
Great respect for J.A. Yeah. Yeah, I have great respect for J.A. Donde, but I would also say don't take the cumulative effect of playing so many playoff games and be dismissive of how great this San Antonio team is playing and how cohesive they are. Because if you want to play that argument in terms of tired and fatigue and long in the tooth, the three main cogs for San Antonio have played far more basketball in terms of games than the big three for Miami.
Right, and they do use more people. But this runs counter to the impression that most people have, Drew. Taken as an entire roster, the Heat, the older team of the two. Not specific areas of the roster, you're right, but the entire roster taken as a whole. And, of course, a lot of the Heat guys, the older guys, don't play at all anymore. Shane Battier, for example, doesn't play anymore. But the Heat are actually the older team.
They are, and Chip Battier played just a few minutes last night. Right. And we talk about the big three for each team, yet, as you said, the MVP of this series has been Kawhi Leonard.
No question about it. Hands down, I think, at this point. Well, there was some stirring on the part of the Rockies yesterday, and not just in the sense that they gained a split of their four-game series against the Braves with a 10-3 victory. We'll talk about that in leading off coming up. More on the NBA Finals. And our Vic Lombardi reporting earlier today that the Broncos have made a quote-unquote very aggressive offer across the next 5 years in an attempt to extend and secure the services of wide receiver Demaryius Thomas. That's all coming next. Leading off, Chad Brown at 12:30. Odds and Ends with Kevin at 1:45. And in the 2 o'clock hour, we'll double-team you with our NFL insider Chris Landry and the good doctor Rick Perea at 2:30 on your exclusive home, still, for the Stanley Cup Final, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Suns Park on Saturday, June 28th and Sunday, June 29th. With water sports, art, music, and a Coors Light beer garden, there will be something for everyone. Activities are free. Food and drink sales benefit the Greenway Foundation. For more info, visit SouthPlatteRiverFest.com. Brought to you by Coors Light, the Greenway Foundation, REI, Confluence Kayaks, and Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Big Al and D-Mac. Today, you get 3 on The Fan. So much great stuff going on. Broncos off for a little bit, but World Cup, NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, and the U.S. Open. Alfred, my goodness.
No doubt. If you love sports, this is a great weekend to be in tune. Father's Day weekend, we're going to help you bring it in right today at 3 o'clock here on The Drive.
Now back to Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
Now it's time for Leading Off. With Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
It's a great team. And they're hot. That's a tough combination.
Setting the tone. Getting you ready. Getting you prepared. Now, the top three stories of the day.
All right, ladies, let's play ball.
First up.
As Schaefer chops one over the pitcher's mound, LeMahieu has it, steps on the bag, and ends the game. Nick Massett and the Colorado Rockies, Willene Rosario, are very, very lucky that Evan Gattis decided to flip the bat down and head to first base. Really, really lucky. Rockies earn a split. They come back to take the final two. Final score today, Rockies 10, Braves 3.
A couple very well-pitched games at the end of this homestand. Just what we needed. Guys kept battling. It's been a tough stretch here, but guys keep fighting and finished up on a good note. Heading out on a tough road trip.
Walt Weiss after the game, and the call obviously from the Braves radio network about
really?
Being lucky.
You could detect that, huh?
Yes. Now, Evan Gattis is a big, strong guy, and if you somehow missed it yesterday, and I know the game was not televised, I always enjoy a day off, but I wish that game was televised. In the eighth inning, on the follow-through of his swing, Corey Dickerson, in the process of fouling a pitch off, the backswing, which happens every once in a while, caught the catcher, who was Gerald Laird, and hit him on the side of the mask and in the jaw. He had to leave the game. He was also stunned on a foul ball a couple pitches prior to that. The very next pitch by David Carpenter squares up Dickerson in his leg. And out of the dugout comes Walt Weiss. And Walt is as mild-mannered as they come, but there's a fire underneath. And I am so happy in some regards that this happened for two reasons, Sandy. One, people maybe will have a better understanding of who Walt is. And number two, because the Rockies did respond rightfully so in the ninth inning with Nick Massett with two outs, nobody on, up by seven runs, hitting it below the shoulders. You don't headhunt Evan Gattis. Gattis knew it was coming. He was professional. Freddie Gonzalez, I thought, interestingly, afterward, basically acknowledged that that was what the Rockies should do.
Well, yes, he was Walt Weiss's staunchest defender. In fact, Weiss said, listen, I'm not there to entertain anybody, but it was Gonzalez who said, I can understand Walt getting upset. We hit Rutledge in the head Wednesday. Tehran, the ball got away. We hit him in the head. We're trying to throw the ball in on Dickerson. That's where we're going to get him out. I can understand how he got upset. I don't blame him one bit. Very interesting comment from the manager of the Atlanta Braves, who at some point, I guess, was sort of the target. Two, as Weiss yelled at Carpenter and kind of had some words in the general direction of the Atlanta dugout toward Freddy Gonzalez. And yet there's Gonzalez after the game basically saying, as you just did, Drew, he did the right thing. I thought that was very interesting. All the more reason to endorse that kind of action from Walt Weiss, whether it went back to Wednesday night or not. Enough is enough.
Yeah, and here's the thing that has quietly bothered me at times, and we see it on the text line periodically, or I hear it, Walt, good guy, but he's not passionate, doesn't have fire. He doesn't let you see it. And one of the most revealing comments to come out of his tenure so far as manager of the Rockies was, "I'm not here to entertain you. That's not my job." When Walt sends a message, and believe me, he is a passionate guy, and when he sends a message, it is heard. It is behind closed doors, as it should be. We'll discuss more in a little bit. Time to go on deck with Sandy Clough.
On deck. This ball game is over, and the San Antonio Spurs have taken a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals. And they've got a chance to close this thing out on Sunday night. The final score, Spurs 107, Heat 86.
Well, we talk about dynasties sometimes in sports, and of course that call, as you could probably tell, from the Spurs Radio Network. How about this, Drew, going back to 1999, assuming they close out this series on Sunday night or at some point in Game 6 or Game 7, that will be 5 championships in 16 years for the San Antonio Spurs. How would you characterize that? If not a dynasty, then what other term would you use to describe such surpassing excellence?
Yeah, I think when we talk about dynasties, we talk about teams winning, 3 championships in 4 years, that type of thing. And it's very difficult, as we all know, in professional sports to really have a dynasty where you do such a thing. The Yankees had a dynasty in the 90s in Major League Baseball. I think how I would characterize it is they were a dominant team over a significant period of time. And that's ultimately what will be written about the San Antonio Spurs. And with the efficiency that they're doing this, who's to say they can't come back and be a huge factor again next year? And the only thing that was left off that final call we heard a moment ago was the series is over now. And who would have thought that?
Not many, I'll tell you that. All right. In Scotty's absence, Drew is in the hole.
He's in the hole!
In the hole.
He's in the hole!
Manning under center, ball in the backfield. The snap, the fake handoff by Manning. Throws a line drive in the back of the end zone. Leaping, two-handed catch made for a touchdown. Grabbed by Demaryius Thomas. What a catch. Lassos a line drive throw by Manning. It's a 3-yard touchdown pass, and the Broncos lead it midway through the third, 19-3.
Yeah, Demaryius Thomas is proving to be a nightmare for Alphonso Dennard. He got inside. Manning floated the ball perfectly up high so the 6'3" Thomas could make the catch with ease. No contact at all from Dennard. Easy score again for the Broncos.
That from CBS television, as the Broncos have made, according to our Vic Lombardi and his sources, have made an offer in the neighborhood of 5 years. We don't have the dollar amount to Demaryius Thomas. Not a large surprise. We read in the last couple of days that they're negotiating with both the agents for Demaryius Thomas and the agents for Julius Thomas. These are two guys you want to sew up long-term in control. It gives you cost efficiency going forward with two of your mainstays on the offensive side of the football. And I imagine whatever the numbers are, they'll be significant because Demaryius Thomas has established himself as one of the premier wide receivers in the NFL, and he is still in what I would term the early to middle part of his prime.
Well, the Broncos loved not only the way he produced at the Super Bowl, but the way he competed. And those kinds of performances, as we all know, were few and far between at the recently concluded Super Bowl. There is no question that beyond Peyton Manning, who obviously is under contract for years to come, that the most important Bronco in the eyes of John Elway and presumably the rest of the Bronco offense or front office is Demaryius Thomas at this point. We don't have numbers, as you suggest, Drew, but I would be surprised if they were much different than somewhere between 60 and 70 million with $30 to $35 million guaranteed. That type of contract structure, and I think it's richly deserved. And again, an example of the Bronco boldness during this offseason to try to consolidate their strengths and address some of their weaknesses. Great move on the part of the Broncos, who are clearly taking the initiative. They want to get Thomas signed, sealed, and delivered for the next 5 years before training camp opens. Looks like they're going to get it done.
I think the good organizations are able to keep their core players involved. And if there was, not that there was ever any doubt, that would be the wrong way to term it. But with Demaryius Thomas, what he did in key games and the fact that he did show up and show up large in a Super Bowl that became a debacle, I think that further emboldened them to say, this is a guy that we want long term. And again, I come back to something else. When you show up your core guys, it gives you an idea from a budget standpoint what you have to spend on your, not bit players, but your more role players, and also what you want to do in free agency going forward. So it's a smart move.
Well, we got a sense that they would be moving in this direction by what they didn't do and not even making an offer to either Eric Decker or No. Sean Moreno. They're saving that all up, not only for Demaryius Thomas, but perhaps not too far down the road, Julius Thomas as well. We'll get Chad Brown's thoughts momentarily on all of this as we continue. Drew, Sandy, Scott, on your exclusive home for the Stanley Cup Final, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Years. At Freedom Financial Services, we still believe in the American dream. We're honored to have helped over 50,000 of our clients achieve their own American dream of home ownership. We have product lines designed to fit the needs of a wide variety of borrowers' circumstances, not just mortgages for the perfect borrowers. Because we're a direct lender, we are not restricted by the qualifying guidelines required by other lenders. We underwrite all of our loans locally, and we service 97% of the loans that we fund. Give Freedom Financial Services a call today or get started online at freedomfs.com. We look forward to helping you claim your American dream. And as always, if you like our service, tell a friend. If not, tell me. I'll fix it.
Call 303-663-5266. Freedom Financial Services, the mortgage experts. NMLS license number 61602, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
104.3 The Fan.
Fast break traffic.
Delays on the north side. A crash on southbound I-25 at 104th being cleared out of the way, pushing things back toward 136. Rest of the highway drive busy where you'd expect. Northbound I-25, some stop-and-go pockets from the University to Alameda. Also westbound I-70 heavy between 270 and Brighton Boulevard. And still a slow drive in the foothills on westbound I-70. They had a full closure of the Twin Tunnels a little earlier. Still hadn't gotten back up to speed, but it is a summertime Friday, so expect a busy drive from a Floyd Hill all the way through the Twin Tunnels. I'm Rick Morgan. That's your Fast Break traffic on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Your Fan Sports Update starts now.
I'm Chuck Clark, first on The Fan.
That was big, head out on the road, some division games, some important games, so hopefully it gets us back on the right side of things.
Justin Morneau, homer to help the Rockies beat the Braves 10-3 at Coors Field yesterday. Ulysses Chacin got his first win of the season, and Colorado earns a split against the Braves. And now it's on to San Francisco to take on the Giants, who've also been on a bit of a downslide lately. First pitch tonight at 8:15. Stanley Cup Finals returns to the West Coast as the Rangers and Dan Girardi hope to take the series to 7.
We don't want to see that thing till Game 7. And, you know, we have to, you know, focus here and just be ready for another huge game. It's a must-win game for us.
You can hear tonight's game right here on The Fan at 6. After a second straight blowout of Miami, history is on the Spurs' side with a 3-1 series lead as teams that have gone up by that margin are a perfect 31-0 in the finals. And the Atlanta Falcons announced they've agreed to take part in the ninth season of the acclaimed HBO documentary series Hard Knocks. Sports update presented by Ideal Home Loans. Homeowners and home buyers take advantage of low rates today at idealhomeloans.com. Hurry and call 303-867-7000. Local sports updates every 30 minutes and breaking news first. I'm Chuck Clark, and you're home for the best live and local sports talk. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
2 seconds left in the quarter. Pass is caught for the touchdown. Demaryius Thomas. Still playing with a tremendous catch for the first points of this game.
And ultimately, the only points of this game for the Denver Broncos. Demaryius Thomas getting in the end zone. Drew and Sandy back with you. Scotty along in a little bit, but Chad Brown has joined us now, as he always does on Tuesday and Friday. Chad, not a surprise, I'm sure, from your standpoint, that the Broncos are going to make a very substantive and substantial offer to Demaryius Thomas. He has earned it.
I think he has. When you couple the talent, you know, he's obviously a mismatch for an overall majority of DBs in the NFL. The power, the speed, the size, with the production, and also with this Peyton Manning window, want to take advantage of that. I think you got to re-sign him, and that means big bucks for Demaryius Thomas.
And we just a moment ago put a framework around it. As far as the numbers are concerned, it's clearly a very aggressive attempt by the Broncos to get this done before training camp begins. Chad, you've been through and around negotiations like this in the past. Does it have the feeling that if for some reason they don't get this deal done by the time training camp opens, they postpone further negotiations maybe by as many as 6 months?
I've always thought it was not productive to negotiate contracts during the season. I think the focus a player has to have and the ability for contractual issues to take away that focus, either we try to get it done before the season, we do our best to get that done, or we can look at this after the season, but try to have those kind of conversations, I think, during the season. It's just unproductive, and it puts the player in a weird place. You can't help but see the general manager. You can't help but see the folks who are in the front office working on the contracts with your agent. And, when they're smiling in your face, but, they're not smiling with dollar signs when your agent's negotiating, it can create a bad feeling. So, again, get it done early. Let's close this potential question mark and erase that from the Broncos' minds, get that done this offseason.
Chad, I'll give you Peyton Manning, but if you were to play general manager and you were looking at your core five of guys that you needed to have cost certainty on and to make sure that they were completely happy, who would the five be outside of Peyton Manning?
You got to go with Ryan Clady. You want somebody who can protect your quarterback's backside. So that left tackle position, and, he's sealed up here for a while longer. I think a player like Demaryius Thomas is a guy you want under contract who can anchor your receiver core. On the defensive side of the ball, they've got DeMarcus Ware there now. But I think it'll be interesting to see how they deal with Von Miller and whether he matures or not, and he's worthy of a contract extension considering the precarious position he's put himself in with NFL drug policies. You want somebody in the secondary. You got a guy like Aqib Talib, and then I think Julius Thomas, because of the mismatch potential at that tight end spot, is another guy you'd want to have locked up. So I know they're kind of working with him now as Demaryius Thomas as well. So those five guys, those five positions really are guys that you want to have who are at their upper echelons of their positions, which means you're paying them pretty good money. So you need to have a contract that rewards them and keeps them happy, but also contracts that give you some flexibility as a team to make moves if those guys get injured or if they don't play up to the standards of their contract.
We always say on these shows, listen not to what they say, but watch what they do. In this case, though, the words and the actions seem to coincide, Chad, in the sense that during the free agency period, you never got the sense that the Broncos were at all serious about making any kind of offer that would allow them to retain the services of either Eric Decker or no Sean Marino. Was that in effect at the time communicating the idea that our priorities, on offense at least, lie now with extending the two Thomases as opposed to Decker and or Marino? And we should have known then where their priorities did in fact lie.
Yes, we should have known. And you know, the just look at it from a talent, from a youth, from and also from a positional standpoint. You got Eric Decker, a number two receiver. You know, some would even say he's a number three kind of guy.
Right.
You got a Knowshon Moreno who had trouble being picked up. The position is so undervalued, and I think folks recognized in NFL circles that this is a guy who really benefited from playing in the same offense as Peyton Manning, and not necessarily just looked at his stats, but saw the fact that, you know, he was not good of a player as his stats would have warranted, and that's why he had some time at home on his couch before he was picked up by the Dolphins. Versus the Demaryius Thomas, a young guy, incredibly talented. Or Julius Thomas, a guy who's just now beginning to understand the game and tap into his real potential. Those last two guys, I would think, were a priority for the Broncos front office. And they had no issues with letting Eric Decker go and Knowshon Moreno go, and rather focus those dollars onto these two guys they're focusing on now.
You know what's kind of interesting is we have this discussion about the most valuable Broncos are. It's pretty clear and cut on the offensive side of the ball. Begins with Peyton Manning, Ryan Clady, who's back healthy this year, Demaryius Thomas, the emergence of Julius Thomas. Nobody would quibble with any of those choices. Those four guys, and, you know, the way Luis Vasquez played, he'd probably be, you know, number five in that group to anchor the middle of your offensive line. Yet when it comes to the defensive side of the ball, where the Broncos spent a lot of money addressing in the offseason, it seems to be a fluid situation. If you were to prioritize who those guys are here in June of 2014, you could feel dramatically different about that, say, in October or November of 2014. Whereas on the offensive side of the ball, Chad, I think we'll still have the same group that we have right now.
Yeah, I would agree that somebody could emerge from that defensive tackle spot and become, you know, one of those guys who we would think of as a must keep guy and a guy who warrants a big dollar contract. Yeah, that situation over there defensively is so fluid because it's so unknown. You know, Aqib Talib has proven himself to be a good player in this league, but there's also an injury history. You know, TJ Ward coming into a new system, sometimes, you know, players don't respond well to a new system. DeMarcus Ware coming off the neck injury, those are tough things to shake, as you become an older player. So, yeah, we feel good about those guys right now and the dollars that are allocated to them. But as you mentioned, come October, come November, come December, we could have a very, very different feeling about those three guys because there is such an unknown.
We'll talk more about that defense and specifically about Vaughn Miller and the way he is presenting himself now and even his physical status going into training camp, which opens in less than 6 weeks. That's all ahead with Chad Brown, Drew Sandy, and Scott. Chad, of course, presented as always by Juicy Burgers and Dogs on your exclusive home for the Stanley Cup Final. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
Drew Sandy and Scott, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Chad Brown is with us as he always is on Tuesdays and Fridays. What's a player's mindset right now? They have this mini camp, another few days, and then there's the month off before training camp, full-fledged training camp. Is that a time to get away, or is that a time to pick up the training to get ready for camp? What's the mindset and what's the schedule for most players?
You try to do both. You recognize that you need to get away from it a little bit just so you can show up to training camp with your batteries fully charged. But when you do get away, you know, instead of vacation to Cancun in February where you didn't call the hotel about the workout facilities, now this time of year, those kind of things become a concern. Well, how am I going to keep my workouts going? Where are we going? Is good food going to be available? All those kind of things. So you're trying to do both. And then as you become an older guy, you also, you know, recognize I need to spend some time with the family and the kids before I'm really kind of got my head down and focused on football. Or even, you know, for some teams, I have to go away for 3 or 4 weeks for training camp. So you're focused on football, but you're also trying to get the little bit of non-football living you can over the course of the summer done as well.
We were talking a few moments ago about the defense. And, again, there is this remarkable number from last year. And understanding that when the offense scores as many points as the Broncos do, the opposition is going to be throwing the ball a lot. So your numbers on defense, by necessity, aren't going to be as glittering as they otherwise might be. However, here are the ugly numbers, Chad. 61 pass plays of at least 20 yards against the Broncos last season. That ranked 27th in the league, according to Jeff Legwald of ESPN.com. The Seattle Seahawks led the league in fewest big play passes allowed with 30. 11 opponents in the regular season had at least three pass plays of 20 yards or more against the Broncos, and even their three playoff opponents had three pass plays of at least 20 yards, including the Seahawks, in their five-touchdown win at the Super Bowl. Jack Del Rio saying earlier this week, it's all about leveraging and tackling. The biggest thing is the back end. It typically comes from the back end, and if you're leveraging properly and then tackling, you can minimize plays and make people go the hard way. First of all, do you agree with Del Rio? And that's why they bulked up maybe more in the defensive secondary than they have in the front seven through the draft and even free agency in the offseason. Is that the right diagnosis in explaining why the Broncos are so vulnerable to big play passes last year?
From a defensive coordinator perspective, that's how I would approach it. Yes, if you're playing with proper leverage in the secondary, you can prevent big plays from happening. But from a personnel standpoint, from a more front office, a procurement of talent standpoint, you got to put pressure on the quarterback. And as a defensive coordinator, if you try to constantly dial up pressure by calling blitzes, then you expose your secondary and guys can't have that proper leverage. You give most NFL offenses, 20 of the 32 teams, enough time to pass the ball. They're going to find alleys and find ways they can create some big plays against you if you don't pressure the quarterback. But to Del Rio's point, having guys back there who play with that understanding of where my help is, you know, using the sideline, a lot of times the greatest tackler in the history of football is the sideline. It's essentially an extra defender for you on both sides. So
right.
Understanding how all those pieces work together can allow you to prevent some of those big plays. But to give up twice the amount of big plays that the Seahawks did last year, that doesn't bode very well. Now, you talk about the offense and teams being behind and teams being forced to pass the ball. I really don't care who you have defensively or who is calling the plays or who's playing cornerback or who's rushing your quarterback. If you give an offense with a decent quarterback enough looks at you over the course of a game, they're going to make plays. So a lot of times the best defenses are really helped and enabled by their offensive scheme and their offensive style. So yes, you know, the Broncos have a very dynamic, fast-paced, high-scoring offense. That doesn't, just by the structure of the offense, it doesn't help the defense. It doesn't limit possessions. It doesn't slow the game down. It doesn't force the opponent to grind things out. It forces the opponent to do things that ultimately make your defense not look very good and not perform very well.
I want to ask you a question about Peyton Manning. He's always the number one topic when it comes to the Denver Broncos, and as this town has gotten to know him and appreciate him that much more, it used to be a great appreciation from afar. In your time in the NFL, regardless of position, so much focus on the quarterback spot, is Peyton, we know he's an outlier when it comes to what he's done. He's an outlier from a preparation standpoint. I guess my question is, how much so? Did you, again, regardless of position, did you encounter some other people that seemingly studied and prepared and enjoyed that portion of it as much as Peyton seemingly does?
Yes. The exceptional ones recognize that the game is really played from a mental standpoint. It's your mind that allows you to take advantage of your physical tools. So guys like a Peyton or guys like a Tom Brady, who I play with in New England, they, because they're, you know, it's difficult to call, you know, two guys who will go down as, you know, in the top five quarterbacks of all time, limited athletically. But from an athletic standpoint, they are not the best athletes on the field. They're not great because of their athleticism. They're great because of their mind. So guys who take that approach and study the game, understand the game, understand what teams are trying to do to them, have that really amazing memory that both those guys have, who can recall a play or a scheme or a defense that they saw a couple of years ago from a coordinator who's now with a different team, and use that to help them make a play. That's always been amazing to me. You know, I learned to play football as a Pittsburgh Steeler. And the motto with the Steelers, we were never thought of as a smart team. We didn't think about the game from a cerebral standpoint. We went out and tried to overwhelm people with how hard we played and overwhelm them with how physical we played. Come to find out later, much later in my career as a New England Patriot, that you can approach the game from a mental standpoint, and it's also a very successful way to play the game. Two very different ways to play the game. But the guys who have the long-term success, the guys who become great players, the guys who are able to maximize their physical talents, but still having a incredible desire and passion for the game as Peyton does, but couple that with a mental outlook and a mental approach to the game that this is how I'm going to win the game. I was watching some tape yesterday when I was working out in my basement. I always watch football games, and I was watching Peyton's rookie year against the Seattle Seahawks, a game I played in. And it was his rookie year, could not be more of a young, fresh kind of guy. But some of those things we still see here, and, you know, I guess, was this going to be year 17 for him coming up? I saw those on that tape as a rookie. He knew our defense backwards and forwards. He knew exactly where the weaknesses were, even as a rookie, and where to attack the team I was playing with, the Seattle Seahawks.
Interesting that very few would question anything regarding Peyton Manning's leadership. But again, back to the defensive side of the ball. I saw a quote the other day that read as follows from a Bronco defensive player. We look at it like you can't go against anybody better than Peyton in our offense every day. That can only help us. That can only make us better, because we're not going to face anyone better. So if we put in the work, play the way we're supposed to, we want to see those results. A year ago, if you heard that quote from a defensive player, specifically from a linebacker, you'd assume it would be maybe Von Miller talking like that. This year, it's Danny Trevathan who's talking like that, and it's Von Miller saying, in effect, Chad, the other day, hey, I'm not as concerned with leadership as I am with getting back to the form I once had during my rookie year and my second year in the league. I'm less concerned with leadership. Is that the right thing for Von Miller to be saying and to be feeling at this point, or should he be more concerned about saying the kind of thing that Danny Trevathan said the other day?
It's really difficult to be a leader if you're not very confident. Leadership comes, you know, from a sense of confidence. Anybody who's been around, say a guy like Brian Dawkins, not a cocky guy, but there's he's certainly a gigantic sense of confidence.
Absolutely.
In himself.
Right.
When you're coming off an injury, there's the injury that you're dealing with, and for Von Miller's case, his knee, but he's also dealing with a lack of confidence. How is my knee going to respond? Will I ever be back? Will I be as fast? Will I be as explosive? So while those questions are swirling around in your mind, it's very difficult to go out and become the leader of other men when you're not even sure about yourself. So in my mind, Von Miller is doing the right thing. Let's take care of Von. Let's get Von correct first, and then we can start worrying about other things. It'd be fantastic if he's able to, I think, as he put it, have some Adrian Peterson type of
right.
of recovery,
yeah,
and gain that confidence back, and then, you know, become a leader, because he has had ups and downs in this league. There's a lot of things he can say that can help players out and help his team out. But right now, his initial focus should be, I need to do everything every day that helped me get back on the field. And now is not the time to be worrying about other players.
Chad Brown, presented by Juicy Burgers and Dogs every Tuesday and Friday, right here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Juicy Burgers and Dogs, having the juiciest, tastiest charbroil burger in town for years now. See why they were voted best burger in Denver by Westward in 2012. Juicy Burgers and Dogs, always fresh, always juicy. All right, what's the freshest And what's the juiciest, Chad, on this Friday the 13th?
Father's Day is coming up on Sunday.
Yep.
And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times dads are asked to barbecue on Father's Day for somebody. They're forced to cook their own meal. Take dad out for some juicy burgers and dogs. Get him whatever he wants, whether it's the buffalo burger, the awesome beef burger, the turkey burger, the lamb burger, or if he's down for any of the dogs over there. Don't have dad behind the grill here on this Father's Day weekend. Get him over there where Paul over at Juicy Burgers will be manning the grill, making something delicious just for dad this Father's Day weekend.
Chad, it's always a pleasure. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you next Tuesday. That's Chad Brown, as always, on the Ring Central Hotline. Ring Central, the leader in cloud phone systems now with HD video meetings. Visit ringcentral.com to learn more. That's ringcentral.com. Scott Hastings, Drew, is in our midst and will be joining us for the final 2 hours momentarily. We'll get back to some conversation, get Scott's thoughts on what has happened to what appeared to be a nip-and-tuck NBA final series between the Spurs and Heat. On your exclusive home for the Stanley Cup Final, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.